The Bible is the greatest success manual that has ever been written. There's a very good reason for that. That's because the Bible is filled with eternal principles, as eternal as heaven itself. God has given us the biblical principles to guide us in life, to guide us throughout time and into eternity. Jesus said, "I have come that they may have life and that they may have it abundantly." John 10, verse 10. And that means in the here and now, an eternal life to come. The five biblical principles of success that we're going to talk about are in the Bible because they're true. They were true and existed even before God wrote the Bible. And so they are always up to date. And I would suggest to us that we cannot be a success in any field of endeavor, whether physical or spiritual, without either consciously or unconsciously applying these five biblical principles of success. We begin with the definition of the word success. I like Earl Nightingale's definition of it. He simply states, success is a progressive realization of a worthy goal. Success is a progressive realization of a worthy goal. His idea of success is this: we should set our goal and set it high. As long as we are progressing toward it, we are already a success. If we ever stop, we become stagnant. If we start slipping back, we are a failure. So with that definition of the word success, setting a goal and progressing toward it, we begin unfolding five biblical principles of success. The first biblical principle of success is set a goal of excellence. Set a goal of excellence. If we will do that, then this time will have been well spent, and we will have come out of the 95% of mediocrity in our nation today. What I'm trying to say is simply this: 95% of Americans have no goal. And if we just set a goal, we get into that 5% who have goals, definite purposes, definite aims, definite accomplishments that they want to achieve in this life. Too many people just go through life with their minds in neutral, just going where they're pushed. But following the path of least resistance is what makes both people and rivers crooked. A few examples show us what happens when people don't set definite goals for themselves. There was a man with a master's degree in agriculture. Guess what he did for a living? He sold ladies' shoes. Now, there's nothing wrong with selling ladies' shoes, but just think of the waste. A master's degree in agriculture, and he's off over here selling ladies' shoes. Another man had a lawyer's law degree. He was admitted to the bar to practice law in the state of Texas. Guess what he did for a living? He delivered milk in the city of Houston. And the ironic thing about it is, he delivered milk to the very man who sent him through law school, a former district judge. The district judge said, "I have the most highly educated milkman in all of Harris County." The thing that's pathetic about it is the waste that went into that man's life. He didn't use what he already had. He must not have had a very well-determined goal. A lot of college students will major in a particular field, and as soon as they graduate, they take the very first job that's offered to them, maybe in something that's completely unrelated to what they majored in. So I want to state the biblical principle of setting a goal. Philippians chapter 3, verses 13 and 14. Paul says, "This one thing I do, forgetting the things that are behind and reaching forward to the things that are ahead, I press toward the goal for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus." Now notice what Paul says. "This one thing I do." Paul did not major in a whole bunch of minors. He didn't have a whole bunch of fingers and a whole bunch of pies. He didn't have too many irons and too many fires. And his all-consuming passion was to serve the Lord his God with all of his heart, soul, mind, and strength. There is power in a purpose. Now, if we're not going to set for ourselves a goal, then the other four are useless to us because they simply tell us how to achieve our goal if we have a goal. And I would remind us again that we cannot be a success in any field of endeavor, whether spiritual or physical, without applying these five biblical principles of success. So number one, set a goal of excellence. I want to use some illustrations of people who set goals and accomplish them. And if they'd not set for themselves these goals, they would have never accomplished them. I want to tell you about Glenn Cunningham. Glenn Cunningham and his brother grew up running foot races on a Kansas farm. Glenn Cunningham set a goal of excellence. He said, "I am going to break the world record in the mile run." But as a 7-year-old boy, Glenn Cunningham did not know what was ahead of him in life. Glenn and his brother Floyd went down to the one-room Kansas school building to start the fire one morning. There were some live coals in the stove from the night before. They poured what they thought was some kerosene into the stove, but it was gasoline. Boom, there was an explosion. Their clothing caught on fire. They scrambled to get out of that one-room Kansas school building, and which only opened from the outside, and their sister had to let them out. And then they didn't know anything else to do. They thought their best chance was to run 2 miles. They were runners. Running with smoldering, burning clothes, they ran 2 miles all the way back home. But Glenn's brother Floyd would die. Glenn was severely burned from the waist down. They called for the doctor, and the doctor said he'll never live. But his life hung by a brittle thread. And the doctor said, "Well, it looks like he's going to live, but he'll never walk." And yet Glenn Cunningham never lost sight of that goal that he had set for himself. "I'm going to break the world record in the mile run." There is one account that says that part of Glenn's rehabilitation was that he asked his dad to take him out, carry him out to the walking plow, tie his hands to the walking plow. Then he would, and it's because he couldn't hold on all day, why he had to have his hands tied, and then he would lean his chest against the crossbar between the handles. Then he would say to the horses, "Get up." And round and around and around that Kansas wheat field, they would drag the body of Glenn Cunningham all day long. He was fighting with those muscles, those legs, those nerves, those tendons, trying to make them respond. He was giving himself a pretty crude form of what you and I would call physical therapy. At age 8, Glenn Cunningham could not walk normally, but he had learned to shuffle along without the aid of a crutch or a cane. And at age 25, he broke the world record in the mile run. There is no way in the world you can keep a man, woman, boy, or girl down with determination like that. Set a goal of excellence. Let me use another illustration of a person who set a goal of excellence. His name, Lexon Kyera. Lexon lived in the bush country of Africa. And at the time he was growing up, there were not even any mission schools to attend. So he grew up in illiteracy. Lexon recalled that the first white man that he remembered seeing was a missionary who came out into the bush. Lexon, even at about the age of 15, set a goal of excellence. He said, "I am going to go to college in America." Now you think about that for a moment. He is illiterate. He's never even been inside a school building. He is 9,000 miles away from our East Coast, and yet he said, "I am going to go to college in America." He asked his mother one day, "Mother, may I have your permission to go to college in America?" Well, she was ignorant of geography. She didn't know where America was. She'd heard that there was a village over the next hill. Maybe that was America. She said to her son, "Why, yes, you may go. When would you like to leave?" Well, he thought he'd better get out before Mama found out where America actually was. So he said, "I'd like to leave today." She boiled him some maize. That's grain. What we feed our cattle and horses. That was his lunch. She wrapped it in a banana leaf That was his lunch pail. He took that crude lunch and a machete and started off to college in America. What do you think his chances are of making it? In the next 2 years, Lexon walked 2,700 miles. I said walked. Until he came to Khartoum, the capital of Sudan. He went out to leave the country, and he found out he had to have a passport. He went to get a passport, and he found out he had to have a birth certificate. Well, he didn't have one. He didn't even know when he was born. He got a missionary to help him get his birth certificate, and then he got his passport. He went out to leave the country, and guess what? He found out it took money. He didn't have any. Well, there's just one thing he could do. He's already walked nearly 3,000 miles to go to college in America. He's not going to give up now. He got a job. Now, it wasn't a very high-paying job because it was unskilled labor. He got a cheap room and started saving his money to go to college in America. During this time, he decided to attend night school, and he learned to read and to write. He went out to the American Embassy, and one of our consular officials gave him a catalog of American colleges and universities. He went back to his room that night so he could try to find the college or university that he thought he wanted to attend. Now, I don't know why he chose the one that he did, but he decided that he wanted to attend Skagit Valley College in the state of Washington. You know how I know? Because Lexon Kaira achieved his goal of attending college in America. Any young man or young woman can get a college education who wants to. If he could walk nearly 3,000 miles, then surely it can be a lot less challenging for any of us. Set a goal of excellence. Now, if we're not convinced that we should set a goal of excellence, then just go to sleep because, like I said, the other four are going to be useless to us because the other four simply tell us how to achieve our goal, if we have a goal. The second biblical principle of success is put first things first. Jesus says, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Let's put first things first. Matthew 6, verse 33. I can have the best goal in the world, but if I waste all my time twiddling my thumbs or playing pinochle or going shopping at the mall or going hunting or fishing or bowling all day, I'll never accomplish my goal. I have to put first things first. Let's see how it works in business. Years ago, United States Steel was a struggling little infant in our nation's economy. Charles Schwab was the president. He was beset by many problems. He needed a lot of help. He heard about an efficiency expert named Ivy Lee. He sent for Mr. Lee and explained his problems to him. Mr. Lee analyzed them, and then he said, in essence, put first things first. That's the advice. Now, you have to understand, when you're charging someone for giving advice, you have to make it sound quite a bit more educated than that. But so it's not exactly how he worded it, but in essence, put first things first. And then he said, Mr. Schwab, you are like every other executive. You've got more work to get done than you can get done. So when you come to work, sit quietly at your desk for a few minutes and think about all the things that you've got to do today. And then he said, write out on a piece of paper in order of importance the things that you have to do today. Number one, the most important thing. Number two, the second most important. Number three, the third most important. Charles Schwab said, hold a minute. What if I don't ever get through with number one? Well, I appreciate his answer. Mr. Lee said, if you don't get through with number one, you will at least have the satisfaction of knowing that you have spent all day long on the most important thing. That always helps. A lot of times I don't accomplish number one, but if I've spent all my time on number one, I've spent my time on the most important thing. But if I waste all my time on number 12, 28, or 36, I will never accomplish number one. Mr. Schwab was still a bit skeptical of this advice. He said, "How much do I owe you?" Ivy Lee made him this proposition. Well, before I tell you what his proposition was, how would you go about charging for it? All he's done is just give the advice Jesus did. Matthew 6, verse 33. Put first things first. Would you charge him $10? Would you charge him $100? Would you charge him $1,000? How would you go about charging for advice like that? Well, Mr. Lee made him this proposition. He said, "You use that advice for 1 year. Every day you work on the most important thing until you get it accomplished, and then you go to work on the second most important thing. You do that for 1 year, and then you send me a check for whatever you think it's worth." Now that's fair enough, isn't it? You use that advice for 1 year. You send me a check for whatever you think it's worth. And less than 1 year later, Charles Schwab sent Ivy Lee a check for $25,000 for that little bit of advice I gave you for nothing. Aren't you glad you came? You didn't know this lesson was going to be worth so much, did you? All right, we're going to set for ourselves a goal. We're going to put first things first. And now we come to the third biblical principle of success. Whatever you do, do enthusiastically, with enthusiasm. Colossians 3, verse 23. Whatever you do, do heartily as to the Lord and not to people. Put your heart in it. That's enthusiastically. Don't let anyone downgrade enthusiasm. They don't know what it is. It comes from Greek and Theos, which means God in. And when God gets inside us through his word, God can do more with us in 5 minutes than we can do for ourselves in 5 years. There was a man and a preacher named Ira North. Ira North was known as Mr. Enthusiasm. Ira North said, "Enthusiasm is as contagious as the measles and it's powerful as dynamite." When we get excited and enthusiastic about our job or the gospel or whatever we're doing, other people will get enthusiastic. If we're not enthusiastic, they won't get enthusiastic. It is contagious and it's powerful as dynamite. There was an insurance company in Nashville, Tennessee, who used to tell their agents, "Fellas, you can come and work for us and forget your brains and we'll forgive you. But the day that you come without your enthusiasm, you are fired." So don't undersell enthusiasm and don't let anyone undersell enthusiasm. All right, we're going to set for ourselves a goal. We're going to put first things first. Whatever we do, we're going to do enthusiastically. And now we come to the fourth biblical principle of success. Years ago, there was a young multimillionaire retiring down in the Gulf Coast of Texas. This young multimillionaire had the inevitable newspaper reporters asking him that inevitable question: "To what do you attribute your great success?" He said, "The three little words. Three little words have made me a multimillionaire," he said. He's about to give us a biblical principle, because there's no true success without applying biblical principles. He said those three little words that made him a multimillionaire were these: "And then some." Matthew chapter 5, verses 40 and 41. Jesus says, "To the one wanting to sue you, and to take your shirt, give him your coat also. That's and then some. And whoever forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. That's and then some." That's a major principle of living for Christ. Luke 6, verse 38. "Give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be put into your lap. For with the same measure that you measure, it will be measured back to you." Not, Lord, how little can I do and still get by? Not, Lord, how little can I give and still be pleasing to you? But, and then some. These newspaper reporters asked this young multimillionaire, how did these three little words make you millions of dollars? He said, as a student in school, I always did what my teachers assigned me, and then some. When I got a job working after school, I always did what my boss wanted me to do, and then some. He said, when I went into business for myself, I gave my customers every bit of goods and services they had a reasonable right to expect of me, and then some. He said, these three little words have made me a multimillionaire. Now, I don't know whether or not he had ever read the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7. But he took a biblical principle, Matthew chapter 5, verses 40 and 41, and became a multimillionaire. And then some. Let me tell you about a man who used to be a carpenter's helper. Not a very high-paying job. About 5 o'clock in the afternoon, right before the 5 o'clock whistle would blow, when the other men are around trying to get their tools together and get ready to head for their cars so that they could head for home or to the golf course or wherever they want to go, this man instead would walk up to the foreman and he'd say, sir, would you mind teaching me how to read a square? And the foreman would always oblige. Would you mind showing me how to cut rafters? And then he would ask, do you mind if I stay a while and cut a few rafters and nail them up? And then the foreman would say, well, you're not getting paid for it. There's no overtime on this job. And this man would say, that's all right. I need the experience. This is his and then some. A lot of times he would stay from 5 p.m. until 8 when it got dark. The men would come to work the next morning. There's more work done than when we left. Who did it? Well, he did. Boy, did you get paid for it? No. Boy, are you an idiot? Doing something you're not getting paid for. You know, that was idiotic 50 years ago to do anything you're not getting paid for. It's sure lunacy today to do anything you're not getting paid for. But let me tell you what happened to him in 4 years. He went from carpenter's helper to owning that construction company. And some of the men who were calling him an idiot ended up working for him. Matthew 5, verses 40 and 41. And then some. One of the greatest surgeons our nation has ever produced used to operate in Boston, Massachusetts. What made him better than any other physician? Something had to. Surgeons and physicians would come from all over the world, and especially from our nation, to watch this skilled surgeon perform surgery. This speaks very highly of him when you know that a lot of times they would take their vacation simply to come watch this surgeon perform surgery. And on one occasion, a young surgeon from our nation took his vacation and went to Boston to watch this skilled surgeon perform surgery. He watched the old surgeon perform a very long, tiring, tedious, intricate, delicate operation. They wheeled the patient out of the operating room, and then the old surgeon went down to the washroom to scrub up and to get dressed. This young surgeon followed him down the hall, and then he came to the washroom and he knocked on the door. The old surgeon said, come in. And then this young surgeon said, please pardon this intrusion. I know how tired you must be from surgery such as that. But I spent my vacation here to watch you operate. And you do something that bugs me. And if I don't find out why you do it, it's going to bug me the rest of my life. And so the only way I know how to find out is just to ask you. Do you mind? And the old surgeon said, why no? Ask me. This young surgeon said, do not our medical textbooks and our professors in medical school teach us that one knot in a suture properly tied is sufficient to hold a wound? This old surgeon said, yes. This young surgeon said, well, you know, every time I notice you tied 3 knots, would you tell me why? This old surgeon said, young man, that 3rd knot is my sleeping knot. It's your what? My sleeping knot. You see, about 2 a.m., I will wake up wide awake. I'll sit up in bed and mentally I'll go through every step of this operation. And when I get down to that last suture, I'll ask myself, will that suture hold? And then I'll remember, I didn't just tie 1 knot like the medical textbooks and the professors say is sufficient to hold a wound, but I tied 2. And then I'll remember, I didn't just tie 2, but I tied 3. And I'll relax and go back to sleep. A job well done. And then some. Now we come to the 5th biblical principle of success. Since this 5th biblical principle of success may come as a shock to some of us, let's go back and review so we can brace ourselves for this one. Set a goal. Put first things first. Whatever we do, do enthusiastically. And then some. Now, since this 5th biblical principle of success may sound to some of us like a dirty 4-letter word, I'm not going to say it. I'm just going to spell it. W-O-R-K. Now, it's humiliating today for some people to have to admit that they have to W-O-R-K for a living. It's been said that there's only two 4-letter words that some people don't know how to spell. One of them is W-O-R-K and the other one is S-O-A-P. And I think that there is some justification to that remark. What does work have to do with success? Absolutely everything. Jesus says, I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night comes when no one can work. John chapter 9, verse 4. And when we look at what John says about all the work that Jesus did, John tells us that if everything that Jesus did were recorded, perhaps the world itself could not contain the volumes that would be written. The world is not a large enough library. John chapter 20. Verses 30 and 31. There was a man who used to give aptitude tests. He was working for the world's largest aptitude testing center. He spoke to a Rotary Club on one occasion, and then after his speech, he asked if there were any questions. A hand shot up. Does anyone ever flunk the aptitude test? This man chuckled. He said yes. And he said, every time I give this speech, that's the first question that's asked. He said, our company has tested hundreds of thousands of men and women in the United States and Canada, and we've kept accurate records. And he said, we found out that 1 out of every 7,000 flunks the aptitude test. Doesn't have a natural ability for anything. So we were concerned about this individual, and we went back to investigate. And he said, we found out that we didn't have to worry about him. Because without an exception, he was always the man who owned the business. Now that one needs a little explaining, doesn't it? He flunked the aptitude test, and yet he was the man who owned the business? Yes. He was not born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He did not have the gift of gab like some people. He did not have personality plus like others. And he found out early in life that whatever he got, he was going to have to work for it. And because he developed the habit of hard work, he owned the business every time. If you're a one-talented person, don't whine and don't apologize. Just use it. The man who had been given 1 talent would have received the same commendation as the man who had been given 5 talents if he had just used that 1 talent. He would have received the same commendation as the man who had been given 2 talents if he had just used that 1 talent. So if you're a one talented person, thank God for it and use it. And if all it is hard work, use it. That's the way the great wealth of this nation was produced. And there is still plenty of room at the top in every field of endeavor in our nation's economy if we're not afraid to W-O-R-K. That's the reason we should dare to dream. That's the reason we should set the sky's the limit. That's the reason we should have some great and glorious goals. But the greatest and the most glorious of all goals is the salvation of human souls. One example of a person who used these five biblical principles of success to become a spiritual success was Marshall Keble. Marshall Keble was a preacher of the gospel. He set a goal to be a soul winner for Jesus Christ. He put first things first by exalting Christ, the scriptures, and the church. Whatever he did enthusiastically, with enthusiasm. He did far more than most. He did and then some. And because he was willing to W-O-R-K, in his lifetime, Marshall Keble immersed an estimated 40,000 people into Christ and impacted countless others with the soul-saving message of Jesus Christ. We can go to heaven if we want to go to heaven more than we want anything else in the world. But we cannot go to heaven if we want anything else more than we want to go to heaven. We have to desire it more than anything else in the world. Jesus says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Matthew 6, verse 21. Paul says, set your mind on the things above, not on the things on the earth. Colossians chapter 3, verse 2. But now, we can have a secular goal and a spiritual goal, as long as they don't contradict, as long as they're not on a collision course. We can have a goal in the secular field and a goal in the spiritual realm. And we can take these five biblical principles of success, and we can become a success in both the secular world and in the spiritual world. As a matter of fact, we cannot become a success in any field of endeavor, whether spiritual or physical, without either consciously or unconsciously applying these five biblical principles of success. Paul says, this one thing I do, forgetting the things that are behind and reaching forward to the things that are ahead, I press toward the goal for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Philippians chapter 3, verses 13 and 14. Eternal success can be ours by following the principles found in the Bible. Let us stand and sing.